lot of my identity was wrapped up into the project and its success. And I felt like my reputation as a professional. And it was early on in my career at a time when I really wanted to prove myself.
Welcome to Re-Energize.
This is a podcast about renewable energy.
Yeah, we know what you're thinking. Another duo of clean tech bros wonking out on energy policy.
Think again. This is about your energy.
How do you find peace on the emotional roller coaster of renewable development? How has this work transformed you?
We ask these questions together with people who have lived it.
Plug in.
It's time to re-energize.
Here we are starting a podcast.
Yeah, I know. How are you feeling about this, Jay? You're in the new year and starting a podcast. Yeah.
Feeling a lot of energy drawing me towards this project and really enjoying the process of working with you to figure out, what it is we're really trying to do here. And when I first thought of this, I was on vacation and happened to be in a city where I was able to meet up with an old friend from the industry. And so we got together. It's only a couple weeks after the election of 24. And we're like, man, this is going to be a bumpy road for the renewable energy space coming up. With the change in administration and the change in focus, it's going to be tough. And we were recalling, the last 10 years have been pretty challenging too, for a lot of reasons, right? And, as we talked more, he was telling me about his experience just almost burning out and basically having to walk away and then kind of finding new energy to refocus and keep going in solar development. And, it just dawned on me. I was like, man, there are so many people who have been in this industry 10 years or more who've really, we've been on the cutting edge of starting something new. And there's been a lot of challenges, whether it's permitting or transmission or, things out like COVID when policy changes, just so many things outside of our control. And so many of us are kind of learning for the first time. So we're getting, gut punches from things that are outside of our control. We're making mistakes and we're having to live day to day through this wild ride. And I just thought it'd be awesome for some of us to be able to kind of create a forum where we can tell our stories with each other and share our experiences with the next generation as we prepare for the next decade of renewable development that is probably going to be just as challenging as the past decade. So that's what I was thinking. I don't know what, how about you, Joel? What's your interest here in this podcast?
Yeah, I just want to hang out with my buddy Jay. If this is this is what it takes. No, I everything you're saying is resonating. It's interesting. When I first got started, and you were the one who hired me back in 2011, I remember feeling like, I don't know if solar is going to work, but I think it will. It seems like the cost is projected to it was too expensive at the time, but it seemed like it was going to keep coming down. I did not have this belief that it was inexorable, right? I thought I think it can work. I believe in it, but I don't think it's preordained. After you work through enough projects and enough challenges and you keep getting them done, a bunch fail too, but you keep getting them done, it can start to feel like, this is inexorable. And it's interesting. I'm kind of two minds about it right now, thinking about some things you said that resonated. It is going to be a bumpy road and nothing is certain, right? I think I now believe that. I don't think anything is certain anywhere, right, in life. I don't think the dinosaurs saw the meteorite coming. Nothing is certain. On the other hand, nothing is certain to fail either, right? And there are so many forces now in support of renewable energy. Think about where we were on solar 10, 15 years ago. Think where we were on batteries 10, 15 years ago. They were very expensive, relatively unproven, and they are now embedded in the energy DNA of our country, solar now being the lowest levelized cost of energy. And so I don't know. I just think it's going to be interesting as we all together write this next chapter. And so I'm kind of simultaneously feeling like, yeah, it's going to be a really bumpy road, but I also believe we can and will get there if we put our minds and hearts to it. And so I hope that this podcast can be part of that. You know, you mentioned, and I've said this to you a number of times, like, yeah, I think about the folks who are right out of college or a few years out, and this might be their first, you know, their first cycle, and this could be a great podcast to re-energize them. I've also been increasingly thinking, Jay, this could be great for folks like you and me, or even folks who have been around it 10 years from now, right? I mean, how often do people say that just being around college students energizes them, right? Because you know, you get some of the energy. And so I think I'm hoping that this can be a podcast for really anyone who's looking to re-energize.
So, you know, why don't we get into it? I would love to hear, you know, a story that you have about your experience working in this industry. You know, just give us a quick flavor of, you know, one of your experiences and, you know, why it mattered. What was it about?
Yeah, definitely. So I'd love to talk about the first project, first solar project that I worked on, where I was the lead, you know, where a lot was riding on me to make it happen. And this experience is so near and dear to my heart, and I hope it's something others can relate to, because a lot of my, whether it was healthy or not, a lot of my identity was wrapped up into the project and its success, and my reputation as a professional. And it was early on in my career at a time when I really wanted to prove myself. I didn't have money and needed it. I was looking to get, you know, to get married and didn't have money for a ring, like literally. And I made a big mistake. Like I just missed a detail and put the project and really the company at a lot of risk for a lot of money. And so to work through that at a time when I was really trying to prove myself, I think is what this story is about.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, I just wanted to say, as I was listening to you kind of introduce that concept, you know, I can totally relate to having a lot of my identity also for a long time kind of wrapped into work. And I think it's pretty well documented that, you know, it's not even just our generation, but like our parents' generation, like, especially in America, there is something about working where people tend to have a lot of their identity kind of wrapped into work. So I think a lot of people can relate to that, I guess, is the point that I wanted to make. But, you know, set the stage. What was going on in your life when this was happening?
Yeah, totally. I was living in Philadelphia. It was 2015. Again, yeah, early in my career, I had been at Community Energy Solar. That's where I was working, Community Energy Solar, private project developer, about 50 employees at the time. I had a girlfriend who I was intending to marry, you know, and was intending to propose to within the next 6 to 12 months. I was looking to get enough money to buy the ring and get married, and just had fallen in love with this person. And I also enjoyed my job. I mean, I enjoyed my colleagues. I was very mission aligned. You know, it wasn't just a job for me. It was a mission getting these projects done. You know, my goal in life was by the time my career was over that, you know, we could get to 100% renewable energy in the United States. And that remains the goal today. And I was at the time working on my very first solar project where I was the lead developer. It was a project in Minnesota.
All right. Well, so what happened? Tell us about this project.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was a 2 megawatt project, not a huge utility scale project, but one that would represent, I don't know, $5 million in CapEx when it got built. And it was a community solar project in Minnesota. So this is the type of project where you get the land rights, you get the interconnection permitting, and then you go and find residential customers to sell it to. This was a market where it was a new market for us. I had identified the opportunity, pitched upper management on it, said, hey, this is a state we should invest in, do multiple projects here. I got their support. That was great. I went out, made a ton of progress on the in investing in the market, not just this project, but a number of others. This was just the very first one, tip of the spear. I made a ton of progress getting the land. I negotiated the land lease. I was responsible for the interconnection at Community Energy. We were very, you know, flat organization, wore a lot of hats. So, you know, I handled the interconnection. I handled the real estate, you know, getting all of the appropriate easements, or so I thought, in place. We'll get more to that, more on that later.
A little foreshadowing there, huh?
A little foreshadowing there, Jay. That's what I did. You see that little seed I dropped? And then we signed up all the customers. We had a good team. We went out, got the residential customers. We got the local conditional use permit. So I'm feeling like we're crushing it. We're going to get this thing done. And we ultimately, you know, I found the found the counterparty to sell the project to, negotiated a price on it, negotiated the MIPA, and we sold it, right? So that was my first project, you know, which is awesome, right? You know, you charge to the finish line, you get through and you pound your chest and the team, you know, big moment. And the thing about project development, right, is it's kind of like elephant hunting, right? Like you know, that I remember one of our board members would talk about it that way. And it's like, you know, these projects are difficult and you eat what you kill, and you chase these projects. And if they succeed, you know, you succeed in bringing down the elephant, you bring all the resources to bear, everyone eats, right? It's this big money-making event. And it's a really good day. If you fail to bring the elephant down, then you and everybody else you brought along with you to take it down just spent days, weeks, in this case, 2 years, you know, to bring it down, put all this money out, and it got away. And now you're not only net neutral, you're actually in the negative because you spent all this money and you lost it. So it's very binary, as you know. And so huge moment, right? And then we find out about two weeks later, after selling the project, the counterparty called me and said, "Hey, we think there's a, we think we think you missed something here. We don't have the, you know, one of the key rights to connect the project to the electric grid. There's this like 5-foot gap, we think, in the,
five foot
gap, you know, and so so you go from pounding your chest to just, you know, the opposite.
So you're developing this project for the first time, you know, your first solar project. You've brought it all the way through, you've closed, you know, you brought some cash into the company, and then you get this call and it's like, "Hey man, I think you missed something pretty important." What did that feel like? Do you remember?
Yeah,
where you were?
Totally. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm a pretty conscientious person, and so and definitely feel ownership of these projects. And so, I mean, honestly, Jay, the word that comes to mind was like dread, you know, like it was definitely like denial first, you know, at first, you know, just like, "No, this can't be true." I remember like being on the phone, pulling up the title report, pulling up the survey, and just looking at it and saying, "No, we thought we have the, you know, there's an easement, you know, that predated this one." Problem was that it had actually been condensed, you know, over time. And so, and we didn't have the agreement with the utility that we needed. And so it was just a miss, you know? And so then when I realized it was a miss, it sunk in that it was a miss. And then that's when the dread set in, like, "Oh no." And kind of going back to what I was saying before, your identity, you know, you go from this moment of victory, you know, triumphant victory, to now, "Oh no, I thought I could do this, but I can't," you know, you question yourself, you question your identity. You're like, and this is a kind of a scary feeling, because now, you know, I mean, going back to the elephant analogy, if we had found this miss early on in the project, that's just what happens in these projects, right? We're trying to make them happen in the face of a lot of inertia. And so there's always these obstacles. If we had found about it early, then we would have known about it before we spent all this money in the project and before we sold it. Now we're in a boat where, "Oh shoot, we put all this money into it. We sold the project to the counterparty. And now have they made, I don't even know in my mind, have they made other decisions since we sold it? Are we actually now liable for not only what they paid us and what we put in, but above and beyond that?" I don't even know at this point. So just a feeling of some fear and self-doubt, really.
Right. Yeah. And the stakes are pretty high, right? You're dead broke. You're like getting started in this industry. This is the first project that you were really in charge of. And now you've found this error and you're kind of spinning around like, "Oh my God, what are we going to do?" So what did you do?
Yep. You definitely call in colleagues, right? You want to, very thankful to be, you know, we weren't a huge company, but we definitely had people, community energy who had 20 years of experience, right? You know, plus. And so called for help. And I remember there was a, I mean, that wasn't an easy thing to do, right? I mean, I think probably the biggest decision that I made in all of this was asking for help. And I remember the night when I decided, you know, it was the night after I found out it wasn't that much time went on, but I was very much not looking forward to making that phone call, because now I had to admit to other colleagues that, you know, I had missed this. And that was definitely a lump in my chest and my throat doing that. But it was clearly the right decision to do, right? If I had held on to that, that would be really, really rough. So I called our general counsel first and walked through it with her. She did exactly what I expected her to do. She was very talented and very quickly asked all the questions very quickly and efficiently to get underneath everything. And she didn't sugarcoat it. She said, yeah, no, you definitely, this is a miss. And this, like, there could be consequences here. And we got to, like, definitely figure this out and manage our risks with our counterparty. But hey, they're our business partner and we'll work through this. And I remember she told me the story, because she could tell I was down and out on it. And she said, hey, Joel, you ever hear the story about the attorney who lost, you know, their firm $1 million? And I said, no. She said, well, there was this attorney once who lost their $1 million. And they went to their boss and said, well, I guess that means you're going to fire me now. And the boss said, fire you? Why would I fire you? I just spent $1 million training you. And so that, you know, I didn't immediately feel better, but it did kind of show me, okay, this is somebody who I know is a real professional, really shrewd, and has been around the block, and they're saying, hey, you're not alone. Like, this is something, and this is going to make you smarter and better at your job. And I, you know, I didn't feel it yet, but I kind of academically knew and understood that was all true. And that allowed me to kind of just, you know, basically what I decided to do from there was just ask for help and just keep moving. And I didn't know what was going to happen, but if we just let more cards turn over, you know, just take it one step at a time. What else can you do? And keep making the best decisions you can. And, you know, things, who knows, you know, they could work out, or at the very least, we can mitigate our risk. So we brought in colleagues who is one of the, if not the most senior developer we had at the company. And he helped me workshop. He basically, I did the legwork, the heavy lifting, but he did the high level vision guidance. Hey, here's how you solve this problem. And basically through a combination of working with the local environmental agency, because it was ultimately a conservation easement that we had to work through here. We had to work with the electric utility because they had a predating easement that could get us through this five-foot gap. We had to convince the local environmental agency that the utility could clear out some trees. Fortunately, they ended up being an invasive species. Got the environmental agency uncomfortable. Fortunately, the utility was willing to do the work, even though they didn't want to, but they could tell they were the only ones who were allowed to. And so we just cobbled this solution together. That's often what it is as a developer, right, Jay? You get everybody who can make the thing happen. Everybody has a different Lego piece or puzzle piece, and you convince everybody to bring their piece. And if you do this and you do that and Party C does that, then we can make this thing happen.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was really cool seeing that come together.
That's awesome. It's really cool. That's awesome. So you solved it. So ultimately, you know, that must have felt good. And, you know, it's been a while. You've done a lot since then. So now when you look back on this experience, I mean, what have you learned from this?
Yeah, definitely, Jay. Looking back on it, I learned quite a lot. You know, immediately, I learned a very important lesson. And what's interesting is there's also a second lesson that I wish I had learned immediately, but I didn't quite figure out until much later on in life. And I'll just go ahead and share both. So what I learned immediately from this experience is that very, very big problems can be solved, you know, even problems much bigger than I thought possible. So long as, you know, you can bring the appropriate resources to bear. And so going back to the experience that I shared, here's what was going on inside of my head in that key moment when I was feeling dread. So I had made this big mistake, sure. But my brain went haywire because I didn't think I had the resources to fix it. So it wasn't just that I made this mistake. It was that I didn't think I had the resources to fix it. I knew flat out I couldn't resolve it on my own. And I think this is something that many of us, you know, can relate to. It's particularly challenging when we feel like our resources are undermatched against whatever our hearts desire to achieve. So from this experience, what I learned immediately is that there are way more resources out there at our disposal, inches away from our fingertips, being underutilized under the surface, just waiting to be tapped. And once I realized this, suddenly more problems that surrounded me felt solvable. So on subsequent projects, I found myself saying things like, let's expand the solution set. And I took this approach on the next project, which was larger, more expensive, harder than the first one. And so I solved bigger problems by bringing in more resources. And then I did the same thing on the next project, which was even more, which was even larger and more expensive and more challenging and so on, just kind of ratcheting it up like a ratchet wrench, taking on bigger and bigger problems by bringing in bigger and bigger resources. So on and so on, until eventually I came to this belief that all problems can be solved if you bring enough resources to them. So, you know, now when you look at this, perhaps some problems are too expensive to solve. So you decide not to solve them because you'd have to bring in so many resources. But nonetheless, all problems can be solved. And that's a very empowering belief to come to. So that was a really cool lesson to learn immediately. Now, here's the interesting part. I think the more interesting part. The lesson that I didn't learn immediately was, what do you do when it is too expensive to solve the problem? Because sometimes that is the case. And I didn't learn that lesson from the story I shared, because ultimately we succeeded by bringing in more resources. So it's not a challenge I had to face in this moment. So sure, I dealt with some temporary dread in this story. However, I didn't truly deal with it in all cases. You know, I had a solve. You know, the team developed a solve here, but we didn't have to face the fact of what if it was too expensive to solve the problem. So honestly, I hung on to that feeling of dread temporarily, and I didn't allow myself to think that failure was an option. And ultimately, I didn't really have to face that because we succeeded. So I took away from the experience this somewhat myopic view that fear of failure is something that can propel you to accomplish more, which I still believe is true. But therefore, fear is a good activator. And that is true to an extent, right? When we take on challenges and we experience fear, you know, that can propel us to go on to achieve, to do more. While there is some truth to that, and while the outcome in this case was a good business outcome, I did find myself wondering, though, over the subsequent years, was this approach a fully healthy approach? And, you know, in full transparency, this is one I'm still working on. Many of you are also still working on this too, but Jay, perhaps you are. You know, when I fail at something with high stake, it's just a really crappy feeling. You know, however, that said, what now feels the most right to me in those moments in life, whether it's on the family front or at work, is acceptance. And I think that's a much kinder choice. It doesn't mean that I'm going to try any less hard to succeed. Not at all. I'm still going to propel myself to get the best outcome possible. But it does mean that sometimes things are simply outside of your control, and you will fail despite making all of the best moves that you know how to make in any given moment in time. And when that happens, I believe I'm still a good person. And so I'll keep this brief, you know, just since it really deserves its own episode, but I'll leave you with something that I return to frequently, which is the serenity prayer. And here it is. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I think, you know, if this is something that I can live by, I think I can accept the outcome, whatever it may be, success or failure, and find joy in that. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on Re-Energize. If you feel your energy rising, please share this with your friends.
And hey, if you've got a story to share, reach out to us using our email address found in the show notes.